Hello, I'm Brian Foster. Today we're talking about Spiritism, and today is another Monday live stream on January 17th, 2022, and we're going to do questions and answers about Spiritism. So if you have a question, please type it in the comments below, and I'll make that my top priority to get to after the other comments in order to answer any questions you may have concerning Spiritism. Before I begin, let us have a small prayer. Dear Jesus, please open our minds and connect us to the spirit world and help us learn and read and receive inspiration from higher spirits on as far as the path we should take, the changes we should make in our lives. Amen. Now, if you want to learn more about Spiritism, I highly suggest that you read the Spirit's book that was codified by Allan Kardec in the 1850s, and he wrote a series of 1,019 questions and did not codify the answers in the Spirit's book, which, as you see right here, it's called Allan Kardec, the Spirit's book, until the answers are the same or similar from different mediums. And of course, this is different than what is done to by a lot of spiritualists, not spiritists, where they just communicate from one spirit, and they really don't know the level of that spirit. Whereas Allan Kardec invested a lot of time making sure that the spirit was in advance and a higher spirit. In fact, he wrote the medium's book, which really covered a lot of this different type of mediumship, how to spot different types of spirits. Now, I would suggest if you're interested in that, type in Allan Kardec space PDF. You'll find all five of his major books in PDF format, and download those, or you can go to my site, nwspiritism.com, click on his picture. It'll take you to the FEB bookstore. You can find his books, and I actually think they're less expensive than Amazon, although you can buy them on Amazon too. They are available. The other thing I suggest you do is take my book, Spiritism 101, The Third Revelation. That is, again, on my site, nwspiritism.com. You can download that for free in English or in French, or if you want it in paperback or Kindle or even Audible, you can order that too. You can just go to my site on the right-hand navigation bar. I have all of my books, concerning Spiritism. But I recommend really getting the free Spiritism 101 and then the Spirit's Book PDF. Okay, let's start on questions. So if you have any questions, again, please type them in. So let's go over what we have from other people. So what I ask other people to do is to, as you think of questions, people will see this. Most people will actually watch this after the live stream is done. In the comments section, say, here's my question. I always get notified when there's a comment. I will copy and paste and put these in my list of questions. So let's start with the first one. What does the Bible mean when it says we are saved by grace through faith, and not by works? And actually what it was, that was Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 through 9. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not as a result of works, that no one should boast. So what do they mean by that? Now, by the gift of works, it seemed like that's not what the Catholic Church heard back in the Middle Ages, where they created these marvelous cathedrals. They are beautiful and they are stunning, I will grant you that, but they are works. But you're not going to be, it awes the public, but it doesn't save the public. So what does work mean? Let's go see what that works. Work means something we do here on earth. Work is something we do physically. Physically, we make something. We work to build a house. We work to build roads, etc. We work to build whatever we wish to build. What Spiritism tells us is that anything, and I mean anything, we build on earth is transitory. The earth will one day disappear. The sun will burn out. And the spirit world will create another solar system with another sun. So anything we have on earth will disappear. Why, we are still alive. We are immortal souls. We will live through billions and trillions and for eternity. Sounds like a long time. That's why one must think about your life as you're just in this short life on earth. No matter what you go through, try and stick it out if you possibly can. So, works are transitory. We're not going to be saved by works. So don't boast about it. Because when you pass over from the physical life back to the spirit life, what do you take with you? Not anything material, is it not? You don't take anything material. So by faith is what they mean is the purpose you are here on earth. And the reason you're here on earth is because you are here to rewire your brain, to rip out your primitive emotions and replace those with advanced emotions, meaning you take out hate, anger, envy, pride, selfishness, replace that with love, charity, fraternity, and honesty, for some examples. And that's how you save yourself. You save yourself through faith, through your willpower. And that is the gift of God, that you have that urge to do that. So I hope that helps answer that question. So there we have another question here. Let's show this. I have problems understanding some of the verbiage used in Spiritist books. I find that I'm constantly having to refer to a dictionary. It is maybe better for me to study the writings with a group. And yes, that can help. And that is one of the reasons that I wrote my books, is because there's a lot of density. I mean, first, especially in some of the books by Andre Luiz, and Genesis too, I guess, by Allan Kardec. There's a lot of technical information. There's a lot of, and then in these other books, in the translations, a lot of times they use older terms that we don't readily understand. You know, like they use magnetic and, you know, instead of energy and terms like that. So, yes, it would help you to with a group, but I also recommend that. And that's one of the reasons that I wrote some of my books, is to really modernize the word and the explanations, and use contemporary examples, and to truly show what I do. So that's why I think a good way also for you to improve yourself, I would say, and understand Spiritism 1, is first read my PDF, Spiritism 101, the Third Revelation, and then go through and if you're interested, read the Spirit Realm. I try and give an overview and take and then use in contemporary language what the Spirit Realm is, what the physical realm is, what a spirit is, what our power of spirit, how do we ascend. And I think once you understand that, then you can dive into some of these other books. And I'm not sure which books you're talking about. Is it from Allan Kardec or Yvonne Piera or Chico Xavier? But you can dive into some of these, and then the concepts should enlighten you better that way, because they'll give you a little bit more background information to do that. So that's what I would recommend. But yes, a study group is always good, because then you can compare and contrast your ideas, and other people can find little gems. Because one of the things I will say, and like the books I've read, if you'll, you know, I've read the Spiritist book over and over again. In fact, one of the things that really helped me understand is when I put it, actually you can do this on my website too, nwspiritism.com, is when I did an Audible version of it, and you can download that for free. And it really made me think of everything. And then like books like No Solar, the whole Andre Luiz series, books by Emmanuel, Divaldo Franco. I read these multiple times. In fact, even the book I've just reread, In the Greater World, which is the book after Revelation on the series of Andre Luiz. You know, I find more gems in there. And that's because when the spiritists, when the spirits, the higher spirits dictate these books, every sentence means something. It's not like one of these books, like a romance or something like that, where you'll have descriptions and you'll have good prose and interesting prose, but do they add anything to the characterization or the plot? They might describe it more and have you visualize. But what I see is in these books are just like a sentence that then I'll think about that sentence and it'll just say, oh, and I'll just go off. And this will give me a clue on a small part of how the spirit world works. As an example, I believe it was, I don't know if it's a book Liberation or the one before. I think it was the one before, and I forgot the name of it. Andre Luiz finds his grandfather. And in it, his grandfather, he was in the lower zone. He found his grandfather like thinking that mud was gold because he had been trapped in the lower zone. And he and a group of other spirits like, oh, look at this. It's gold. And their minds was gold. But and Andre Luiz said, that's just mud, you know. And so he goes, he asks the other spirits, can you do anything for my grandfather? And they go, and this surprised me because I had been reading before about reincarnation and the fact that you plan and you know you're the planning for reincarnation for spirits in one of the levels of heaven is very complex because you have your plan, you interconnect with all sorts of other people, they go through and you talk to other people and you decide what you want to achieve, right? What character flaws you want to fix, etc. Or if there's a mission, and that gets very involved too. So, and then you're followed by your spirits to help you stay on that mission. But then I read this part about Andre Luiz's grandfather. And they said, oh yeah, we can help him. Because we're given lots of leeway because we're gonna put him and reincarnate him as a bricklayer. And we're given lots of leeway for people who don't really interconnect or affect the culture or the political or the, you know, or the trends of the day. And so, yeah, we have a lot of leeway for that. So what does that mean? That means that for those who are actually going to change the course of history, and I'm not talking about just like an individual, like Napoleon, yes, he changed a lot, right? But I'm saying just the managers, the middle managers, you know, quite a few people that will actually affect the direction of a culture or an institution or a government or an army, whatever, they will be analyzed deeply, not only by the people who are reincarnating and their immediate mentors, but higher up to make sure all this works. In fact, when I got a... before I finish this other point first. So that's what I was in my mind for everyone. But then I read where, oh yeah, your grandfather's no problem. We'll just give him a slot right there in this probably poor section of town and launch him out, right? Yeah, I'm sure they're going to do some other things and give them some trials and tribulations. But this is the things where you read that sentence, and it's a very quick sentence, and you could just pass over it. But then, if you're discussing with other people, you go, oh, well, they didn't put much thought into his grandfather, did they? But then again, for someone else, they put a lot of thought into it. So it shows you that for more immature spirits, just being on Earth and having more of a broader probably view of their ups and downs of life helps them get in touch with their consciousness and starts helping them understand what happens to their primitive emotions versus as the higher you go and you have some missions to accomplish, more thought is put into your planning. And that makes sense because, after all, more thought is put into training someone who's in the higher position of responsibility or power than someone who is doing something very simple. And, you know, that person can learn on their own or the very simple training. But as they mature, they'll have more and more sophisticated learning opportunities. So these are the type of things that can be very exciting to read and to explore. And then it starts putting in, what's the best way of saying it? It starts filling in the picture of how the whole process of reincarnation and karma and planning out your lives like a big project plan and what happens with the analytics as you're going through your plan. These are things that I piece together for a lot of different writings and just see one sentence here and another sentence there. And this is why reading about Spiritism is so exciting. So I hope that helps that. So if there's any other questions, please let me know. So let me get back and take a drink of water first. Oh, before I end that, interestingly, I'll talk a bit about what was given to my wife and I when we were at a mediums meeting, talking about us. So when we were at a mediums meeting in Rio de Janeiro, and this, I think, is one of the first messages, communications we got from the spirits. And of course, now I'm not a medium. I'm against the wall. I'm not at the table. I'm too dense to be at the table. But we got this message. I'm not going to tell you the whole message. I just kind of paraphrase it. It said that, well, first of all, you've failed time and time again. But actually, I think I'm combining a couple communications. But you have been chosen to do this, right? To be here, to try and plant the seeds of Spiritism. So what does that mean? So that means that I was given probably a very simple mission, but it's probably also meant that I wasn't just dumped into a place saying, okay, go be go do something that doesn't take much education or much skill. I'm sure everything, I don't want to put down anybody that does manual labor because that's hard and it does take a lot of skill. But someone that doesn't have much interactions with a broader range of people, probably. And so that tells me that, okay, even though I failed before, somehow I still had enough training and pre-existing predilection to try and do better, although they said I failed. But they said, okay, we're going to give you another chance, right? And that's why I love someone like Geraldo Lemos Neto, who was there and helping and being a real good assistant to Chico Xavier. And they said, and someone asked him, well, how lucky you are to be selected to help Chico Xavier, because he's just a great medium, and Chico Xavier is the one, the medium that did all the books by André Louise, psychographed the books by André Louise and Emmanuel. And he said, most probably they said, okay, this is your last chance to do something good. We're going to put you right next to Chico, and this is your last chance. And I thought, that's how I felt too. I felt that, like, okay, because in that message that was given to my wife and I, it was said that you were selected, and I don't know how to put this correctly, but I somehow got the idea that I was selected for this small tiny mission, which I'm not doing very well. I'm trying, but I was kind of like, okay, yeah, use this guy to see if this works, right? But I felt that the spirits that would be in charge of kind of making sure I did my mission said, like, are you sure? I mean, this guy is a screw up. You know, he's always fails. And they said, no, go ahead. Now, I could understand that. And I probably caught that because I've been a middle manager. And as a middle manager, you're always thinking of how to cover your, you know what, and still get the job done. And they probably thought, okay, if you said to use them, we'll use them. But if anything goes wrong, it's not our fault. It's your fault. Right? I'm sure they don't think that way, but I did. Right. So these are things that give you thoughts of how this actually works. So I thought that might be interesting for people to hear. Okay. Let's get the next question. Can a person be a spiritist and utilize therapy? So absolutely. Yes, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. You can talk to a psychiatrist or a doctor or a psychoanalyst or whatever, a psychologist, whatever you want. In fact, there are spiritist hospitals that will give you regular therapy, plus they will hold mediums meetings and they will try and determine, are there spirits obsessing you for some reason? And they'll try and say, okay, why are you obsessing this person? Can you please stop that? He or she is trying to be a better person. But then again, you know, spiritist says, always go to your doctor, because some problems can be organic and you just might need certain medicine. So absolutely, always, you know, and we're not like faith healers or something like that. We believe in healing by your own faith and your own empowerment and your own dedication and focus of your will and your energy, but utilize whatever you can in the modern medical world, because the spirit world, whatever disease or whatever they give you, they know what's going to be cured by whatever the level of culture or science that we are at in the time that you are here on earth. So don't say, hey, I'm a spiritist, I never need to go and have my checkup or anything like that. No. That's part of it, right? Go have your checkups. Go, you know, keep yourself physically fit. Now, what they do tell us is there is a lot of food that has a lot of chemicals on it. Try not to eat meat. My wife and I keep saying we should be vegetarians. We fail. We try. We fail. But, and then also like more organic food. Don't eat these plants that have that have all sorts of chemicals sprayed on them and that type of stuff. So try and eat as well as possible and keep yourself clean. Don't, you know, over drink, those type of things. So I hope that helps that one. So yes, absolutely utilize therapy. Those are all good for you. Okay. Let's go back here. Where are we? Right here. We'll go back to the questions. Okay. Another question. Also, people who worship in other religions, is what they are considered to be doing wrong? Are they worshiping the true God in different ways? Would that be considered idolatry and result in punishment or future atonement? And the answer again is absolutely not. There's nothing wrong with worshiping in other religions. And in fact, Spiritism is not a religion. It calls itself a doctrine. And what spirits have told us is that the future of Spiritism is that that religions will adopt the basic tenets of Spiritism, and that they will continue to do, but they like the Protestants and the Catholic churches will, Buddhism's already has adopted the tenet of karma and reincarnation and how the spirit world works. So they will start absorbing the information at some date in the future, not now. Although I did read an interesting study that 25% of people who go to church believe in reincarnation. So this shows you that there's a element in their mind that like kind of knows that we're here and we're not here just once. Something tells them I've been here before. It's, you know, it's a little piece of knowledge or instinct. I don't know what, but that they've been here before. I thought that was interesting. 25% of people who regularly attend church or temple. So there's nothing wrong on that. And in fact, Chico Xavier's sister was a very devout Catholic, and she went right to heaven and stayed in a Catholic sanatorium to recover. And in heaven, you'll find, in the lower levels of heaven, what you'll find is that if you're Lutheran, you may go to a Lutheran sanatorium with other Lutherans around you, or Methodists, or Catholics, or Buddhists, or whatever, because you're in the lower levels of heaven, you're still associated and you're still somewhat attached to earth. And that affects you. So you still identify with certain ethnic groups, maybe, or tribal groups, or, you know, however important in your mind, you'll probably be sent to something with other people that are close to your affinity, right? Because that's the law of affinity. You're set to where like is close to like. So you'll be sent there. But now as you rise in heaven, you understand that all these different formats of religion is unimportant. You learn more about what the spirit universe is, how we're supposed to improve our mind, who Jesus really is, what he does for us, a leader, governor, CEO of our planet and other planets besides. And it's the, you know, the individual religion just isn't that important. You just know that, yeah, everyone has to improve. We have to be humble. We have to learn. We have to gain wisdom, which is empathy and knowledge together. So there is no resulting in punishment or future atonement. Now, in whatever religion, or if you're not religious at all, if you use that religion and you tried to hurt people with it and use it as an excuse to do harm, just like anything else, that would cause future atonement, right? Because that is a wrong that's happening, and you don't want to do that. So again, just to let you know that Spiritism isn't something that people are going to say, oh, you know, if you don't do this, you're in trouble. And they're not gonna, and there's no rituals or priest or like you're gonna be excommunicated from the Spiritus Center because you didn't wear your hat sideways on Wednesday, right? Now there's none of that. And I understand why people have the outward portion of religion and of anything, because it's important to them. They feel like they're part of the tribe. And that's why Spiritism is a lot like Buddhism. It's more almost of a middle-class analytical thinking portion of the human race. Because in Spiritism, you're really there to pick up what you want, understand it, apply it to yourself, and see how you should, how you should improve your own personality and character for you to fit in within the spirit universe as you understand it. And it's your decision. And if you don't make that decision this life, all you're doing is slowing down your progress. You'll make the decision in a future life, because all your trials and tribulations will lead you to that point where you purposely say, oh, okay, I have to change. And in fact, and that's how spirits tell us, right? When we say multiple lives, what we could consider is, well, each life we get a little bit better, and there's this line that's, you know, inclined to the, and we, you know, we just keep going up this line, and each life we learn a little bit more and we cast off a little bit more of these negative emotions, etc. That's not how it usually works. How it usually works is you'll go and you'll park yourself in life after life. And I think that's what I did, is that you'll show the same characteristics no matter how tough the trials were. You'll still be selfish and prideful and want luxuries and wealth, right? Because I think that's what I went through. But when each of these trials and tribulations fail to provide the stimuli for you to make fundamental changes in your character, they'll give you harder and harder trials. That's why people have hard trials. That's why terrible things happen to good people, because they're just too stubborn to learn. So what happens is you'll kind of, they call it parking. You'll park yourself in life after life. But then all of a sudden, a light will turn on and you go, oh, maybe there is something more important than I am. And maybe I should be a nice person and not take advantage of others. And then you'll go on to this, you know, logarithmic incline, the whole hockey stick graph, where then you will really improve in subsequent lives and more each time. Because, and you don't worry about backsliding, because as you improve, your conscience and your instincts comes with you in each life. So as your conscience improves and you understand the law library of the divine laws and how to go through that maze of gray areas, and your instinct says, no, don't go there, you know, don't try and start a business that's going to cheat people to make money, you know, don't drink a lot of alcohol, right? All those instincts are going to be there with you. And so you'll make better and better decisions as you go in life after life. Okay. Let me get back. Again, if you have any questions, please put those in the comments. Okay. What does Spiritism say about our personal relationships, romance, sensuality, in the astral worlds? So there is still people that, you know, in the lower zones, there still is that aspect of sensuality and on the baser parts of it. Now, in the higher, in the levels of heaven, which is probably more what you're asking for, there are still absolutely relationships. There are husbands and wives that have been together in life after life. They still love each other. They still live together in the same house. But they don't really have that urge for the personal pleasure, right? Sensuality. And so, and why is it? It's like the urge to eat. You know, people say, you know, I really like to eat. I don't want to lose that. And I keep saying, well, people eat, they'll drink broth and maybe eat some fruit as you go higher and higher in the spirit levels, but you don't really need to, because you get your energy from energized water and sunlight, all that. So, and the same with this was these, the more sensuality aspects of relationships, that you still love each other, you want to be with each other, that doesn't change. But the urge for that, and just like eating, what I believe is it's replaced by other more important things, which is the deep true love, the deep interest in each other, the deep knowledge that you complement each other and you help each other on the road to perfection. And that doesn't have to just be between two couples. There was this wonderful passage in one of the books by Reverend G. Val Owen about, and I cover that in my book, Spirits in the Spirit Universe, of how spirits ascend. Of these, I think it was 5 or 7 women who had this group, and they all wanted to rise and from one level of heaven to the next together. And that if one kind of rose above the other, that one would stay and help the others learn and understand what they needed to do. And so that is a group of female spirits that loved and supported each other. And I don't know, it didn't really go into how much how they reincarnated with each other. Probably they probably did in some sort of overlap at some form. Maybe, you know, some maybe not, depending on what they wanted to repair and fix in their personality and character. But so that is still there. That deep friendship is in, I think that what people do not realize is on Earth, we feel alone. We don't feel that connected. And it's all different, and you feel part of everything. You feel this immense wave of love and contentment when you're in the spirit world, in the high levels, you know, above the lower zone, I should say. You feel this, and that's why when you go to heaven, it's not a good place to repair even minor character flaws, because you feel too good. But you're very content, you're stress-free, and it's a great place to learn academically things and to understand things and to analyze things. But it's not that efficient of a place as it is here on our physical earth, where you have blinders on. You're not allowed to feel that interconnectivity with the rest of the spirits around you, the whole spirit world around you. And you're actually bombarded by stimulus, which is all set up for you to connect and affect your feelings and your emotions. So then you can work on these primitive emotions and then replace them with more advanced emotions. So I hope that answers that question. So it's a good question. And yet, and those things, you know, I think they just become less in the level of priority. Okay. Let's go. Next one is, should we accept the writings of Emanuel Swedenborg as complementing the Spiritist doctrine? So I've always said, and I love Emanuel Swedenborg. What a wonderful, wonderful person. I've always said that it's just like Socrates was an advanced man for Jesus Christ. Because if you read through the dialogues of Socrates, many of the things Socrates said is what Jesus said. Right? Might does not make right. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And many other things. So, Emanuel Swedenborg absolutely should be read. I've read quite a few of his books. But he didn't exactly understand everything what he saw. And I first learned about Emanuel Swedenborg when I was reading one of the books. I forgot which book it's in, by an Andre Louis series of books, where a spirit said, yes, well, you know, we would bring people up into the levels of heaven, and they would misunderstand where they are. They think they were on another planet, but they really weren't. And like, as you know, as an example, the case of Emanuel Swedenborg. And I'd not heard of Emanuel Swedenborg till I read that little passage. And that's what I do. Whenever I hear a name, I just go look it up. And so then I looked up Emanuel Swedenborg, and I said, okay, oh, I got to read this. It's a very interesting guy, you know, wrote his books in Latin. I think he was, what, 100 years, 75 years before Allan Kardec. Don't quote me on that one. So let me go through. So then the other thing is I read was in the Spiritist magazine of 1859, they had a mediums meeting with Allan Kardec, was part of that meeting. He's not a medium, but he was at that meeting. And they evoked Emanuel Swedenborg. And so I figured this is a great way to answer this question. So Allan Kardec says, speak, my old friend. He goes, and Emanuel Swedenborg, you honor me with the title of your old friend. However, we are far from being contemporary, since I only know you from your writings. It is true, but I do know you since long ago. That's Emanuel Swedenborg. Allan Kardec, we wish to make several questions about many points of your doctrine, but it is late now, and our only objective is to ask if we can frame these questions in our next session. And he says, with pleasure, allow me to already to make a correction in my writing that is important to me. This is Swedenborg. When I wrote my doctrine, I affirm under the inspiration of the heavenly counselors who dictated to me that each people were in separate spheres in heaven, and that the distinct character of each nation was preserved, not by individuals, but in large families. Experience has convinced me that that is not the case. Which, again, so Emanuel Swedenborg says, and I can see why he did it, because they would have sections. And in fact, spirits have said that. They'll have sections having like people who are, just like I said before, Catholic or Protestants, who are, you know, imperialist, who knows? they'll kind of be together. And that's probably why he thought that, you know, they were separated. Let me carry on. Are any other points subject to dispute? And the answer from Swedenborg, yes, many others, but this is one of the most important. We have here several mediums. Do you have preference to communicate with us? No, or better, yes. I would choose a mechanical medium, as you call them, and fast as well. Okay, so then this is the second communication. This was in September 16th and September 23rd, 1859. Dear good friends and faithful believers, I wish to come here to encourage you in the path that you walk with such great endeavor with respect to the spiritist subject. Your zeal is appreciated in the spiritual world. This is Emanuel Swedenborg speaking. Move on, but be aware that the obstacles will still block you for some time. Thus, as with me, you will not lack detractors. I preached spiritism a century ago and found enemies of all kind. I also had keen followers that supported my courage. Now, they never called it. It's Emanuel Swedenborg back when he did it. I'd say it was 100 years ago. They didn't call it spiritism. It was kind of the start of spiritualism, but he knew it was spiritism. Carry on. My spiritist moral and doctrine are not exempt of great mistakes, which I do acknowledge now. Thus, the penalties are not eternal. I see well. So he thought penalties were eternal. Now he knows that's not true, just like spiritists say. God is very just and good to eternally punish the creature that has not had sufficient strength to resist to the passions. Also, what I said about the world of angels preached in the temples was not but an illusion of my senses. In good faith, I thought I had seen it, as I said, but I was wrong. So again, angels are us, but a higher spiritual level. And of course, when he saw that, he thought that those were, you know, as many religions say, that they were created by God. I forgot exactly what he said about them. Carry on, but be prudent so your enemies do not find strong weapons against you. Watch over the space you gain daily. Thus, courage. Your future is guaranteed. Your strength is your speech in the name of reason. Do you have questions to me? I will respond now. Okay, here it is. You had your first revelation in London, 1745. Did you wish for that? Were you already involved with the theological questions? And he answered, I was already involved with that, but in no way I wished for that revelation. It came spontaneously to me. And in fact, knowing more of the story of Swedenborg, he was in this pub or restaurant in London, sitting at a table eating, and his spirit came up to him and said, you're too fat. That was his introduction to a spirit. So remember that, people, is that when spirits talk to you, the spirit doesn't come up and say, you are just marvelous. We're going to talk to you and you're just so smart. No, they'll say something like that. They'll tell you matter of factly. They're not going to, you know, blow you know what up your what. They're going to tell you the truth. Question two, who was the spirit that appeared to you saying that he was God himself? Was it really God? No. The answer is no. I believe in what he said because I saw a superhuman being and I was flattered. Okay, now this is important. And this is where I think a lot of Christian prophets and other religions, they say God spoke to me or Jesus spoke to me. So now look at what Swedenborg just said. I believe that was God because I saw a superhuman being. I was flattered. And question three is why is he taking God's name to be better obeyed? So one would think the spirit world should never tell you a lie, and they won't tell you a lie. They'll just say, they won't just correct you. So, and you know, God bless everybody who thinks that Jesus or God is talking to them directly, but most probably it's a spirit. But it's just as good as the spirit. I mean, there's nothing. The message is still completely valid, but it's probably not. They have people to do that. In fact, Paul in the book, Paul and Stephen, when Paul first on Damascus and talked to Jesus, and then I believe he still talked to Jesus that first time. But then afterwards, when he was given inspiration. And he kept thinking he was talking to Jesus. He was actually talking to Stephen, who was the first martyr, right? He was stoned, and Paul kind of had a part in that. But Stephen was the one that was giving him direction under the managerial edifices of Jesus Christ. Number four, can God directly manifest to man? He certainly could, but no longer does that. So I'm not sure about that. There was a time when he did manifest then. Yes, in the first ages of earth. Again, I don't know if the Spiritism agrees with that. Number six, the Spirit who made you write things that you now recognize wrong, did he do it in ill faith? And the answer is, he did not do it in ill faith. He was mistaken himself, for he was not elevated enough. Today, I see the illusions of my own spirit and intelligence influenced him, despite anything. However, among some system errors, it's easy to acknowledge great truth. Absolutely. He's absolutely right. Number seven, your doctrine is founded on the correspondences. Do you still believe in those relationships that you found among things of the material world with each thing of the moral world? The answer is no, it's a fiction. And that's where, if you read Swedenborg, you really get bogged down into these correspondences. So, I mean, if you're interested in them, I would skip over that. Number eight, what do you understand by these words? God is man himself. And he said, well, God is not man. Man is an image of God. Please elaborate is the question. I say that man is an image of God because the intelligence, the genie that he eventually receives, is an emanation of the divine omnipotence, the intelligent principle, as it's called in Spiritism. He represents God on earth by the power he exerts onto nature and by the great virtues he has a capability of acquiring. And that's something that Paul even said is, and this is in spiritual communication, not in anything he wrote in the New Testament, is that our job here on earth is to become omnipotent and to become like gods to other races and other planets, right? Is to become as godlike as we can, because he knows, now with his spirit, that we create with our mind. And so, and that's why earlier times when people saw spirits that could do these things, they said, oh, this is like a god, right? Okay, number 10, should we consider man a part of God? The answer is no, man is not part of divinity, it is only his image. Number 11, could you tell us how the communications from the spirits were received by you? Did you write what was revealed to you like the mediums or by inspiration? And he answered, when I was in silence worshiping, my spirit was in a kind of ecstasy, and I clearly saw an image before me speaking with me, dictating what I had to write. Sometimes my imagination mixed with all that. And of course, absolutely right. I mean, mediums say this. Number 12, what would you think about the fact mentioned by Knight Balon with respect to the revelation you made to Queen Luisa Ulrica? The revelation was true. Balon denatured that. I'm not quite sure what denatured that means, but I believe the revelation to Queen Luisa Ulrica was something about her brother in heaven and what he said to her. And I don't remember this correctly, but this is where people were like, who is this? Who is this Swedenborg? And this made a big impression on her. And she started talking about it in the different councils and boudoirs of Europe. The other thing that made Swedenborg quite famous is a woman came to Swedenborg and said, look, my husband just died and he had bought, I think it was silver or something from this merchant. And I know he paid for it, but the merchant says he wants the money because I don't have the receipt. And then Swedenborg came back there and said, okay, you're going to find the receipt in the back of this drawer or something like that. And she went and she found the receipt in the back of the drawer. And that, again, kind of upped his public relations and his being famous. That what got people interested in what he said. And of course, what he said was very revolutionary at that time. Number 13, what is your opinion about the spiritist doctrine as it is today? The answer is I told you that you are in a safer path than I was, since your light are generally broader. I had to fight a much greater ignorance, in particular against superstition, and absolutely right. You did. This was quite different. So that is, let me go. I thought that would be interesting for people who wanted to the idea of Emanuel Swedenborg. So what a wonderful, wonderful person. And I recommend to understand different aspects of Spiritism is to read Emanuel Swedenborg. He's got some excellent ideas and very, and he has things like, you know, it's not the deed, it's the intention of the deed. There's some really good writing with Emanuel Swedenborg. So don't belittle that, even though he you know, was not completely in concert with everything to do with Spiritism. Okay, another question here. Question is, what does Spiritism believe when it comes to the Christian God and the Bible? Is the Bible real or not? What about other religions according to Spiritism? So there is only one God, and you can call the God whatever you like. In Spiritism, there's actually, I think it was one of the first questions, if I remember, there's a good definition of who and what is God, all, as far as we could understand. Now, the basic premise is the fact that at our level, and even spirits who are in the levels around the earth, say, we cannot understand God. It's not there for us. We don't have the mental capacity. So we on physical earth can't understand God, and the spirits around the earth in heaven, even they do not really understand God. Now, is the Bible real or not? So, but anyway, so these other religions, they try and explain as well as they can. The Bible, the Spiritism says, the Bible was written for people, communicated to the different prophets and mediums at the level they were at technologically and culturally at the time they were given the message. So this is why you see many passages in the Old Testament that are quite cruel. They'll say, go into this town and kill everybody. And then if they didn't kill everybody, they'd be punished, right? So why? You know, that's not nice. Well, at that time, I believe the spirit world was trying to get the Jewish culture and tribes to take orders, to start, okay, listen to us. We mean what we say. You're not smart enough to question. It's like talking to a four-wheel. Don't cross the street. Why? Don't cross the street. You're going to get hurt. Why? You're not going to cross the street, right? You're only going to explain it so far to a four-year-old because you know learn to follow orders. That's what you're trying to instill in them. And so then the New Testament, which has many, and the Old Testament, and what Spiritism says is the messages in the Old and New Testament of love, fraternity, charity, so on and so forth, are eternal. Everything else was needed to communicate to the people at the level that they could understand. And this is why Jesus talked in parables and didn't directly say things. And you didn't say, oh, there's reincarnation and you're going to live, you know, over and over life, you know, with karma and all this. Because this was so, if he said it directly, now there are passages in the Bible. In fact, what Spiritism says is that the Christians, when they actually started organizing the Bible, they took out a lot of these sections because the priest and the people in power didn't really want to talk about reincarnation because they didn't want people to think that, hey, if I'm a senator, next time I could come back as a lowly slave, I don't want them to think that, right? And vice versa. No, let's keep them dependent on us. So, but a lot of these things weren't overtly said, like forgive 70 times 70. And he didn't say, well, forgive 70 times 70, because as you go through life after life and you have enemies, they'll still bother you in life after life. And do you want that? They're going to slow you down. It's not worth it going into that conflict because they could be with you and bother you for thousands, literally thousands of years in multiple lives. That's happened. He couldn't say that. He could only start hinting at it, right? So these are why, and in other religious writings too, you'll have indirect messages. And this is what Spiritism does so well. And in fact, that's why a lot of what I've been doing, I've been going through verses in the New Testament and explaining them by Spiritism. Also, a good book to read about what Spiritism says about the New Testament and a lot of different passages is The Gospel According to Spiritism. And they'll tell you, you know, what these things really mean, what Jesus meant when he says the meek will inherit the earth, etc. Yeah, as an example. You know, when we hear the word meek, it's like someone will just sit there and you can slap them around and you can do anything you want and they just won't fight back. No, that's not what that's not what Jesus meant. Jesus meant as in someone who is a person who understands their willpower and that can focus and that can get things done through being maybe indignant or at least demonstrably have willpower. But not to lose their temper. That's what he meant, is that you don't just go off in this violent rage, which because once you start primitive emotions, you lose everyone's focus. But no, someone to get what they need to get done and get it and focus, but always be calm and cool and still get what needs to happen, right? Move whatever you're trying to do forward. That's what he meant, but he can't say that. And so, and again, you know, as the Spirit's book says, a spirit can come back as a male or female. He couldn't say treat everybody equally because you can come back as male or female. People were like, nah, I'm not listening to this guy. So now in other religions, you know, Zoroastrianism, Buddhism, and Confucianism, Taoism, we have to remember is that these are the people who brought these, and then even, you know, in the Socratic dialogues, Zoroaster, a Buddha, they were all messengers, and some of them were ministers for Jesus coming to earth to bring approximately the same thing that Jesus brought. Now, as the message exactly the same? No, because each had their own level of technology and culture at the time. But they all have like the golden rule in common, and they all have passages about reincarnation. You have to search them out, but you can find them. So there's a lot of things in common. And that's what, because they're all sent by the same central authority figure, Jesus Christ. So any religion that teaches you to be a nicer person, a more giving person, a more loving person, is good. Now, anybody can go through and find out in one passage or another how they can be cruel and mean to other people, and that's not encouraged. You're right. That's something that person wants to do on purpose, and maybe other people want to do on purpose. That's not encouraged, and that you may have to atone for. But usually is the direction of almost any religion in the world is to become a better person, a nicer, kinder person. So it's all good. And in fact, prayers are answered by anybody in any religion and by people who are atheists. If you're an atheist and if you're a good, kind person, you will be helped and assisted by the spirit world. God and Jesus doesn't say, oh, you have to believe in me or I'm going to just ignore you. No, anyone who is a good person who tries their best, even if they don't believe in any type of higher spiritual authority, can go to heaven. Now, what happens to some atheists who really believe without a doubt that when you're dead, you're dead. Unfortunately, what happens to them is that they will stay sleeping in this kind of a trance state because in their mind thinks there's nothing there. And it could take a long time for them to be woken up in the spirit world. It will happen. They'll be woken up and say, yeah, you're really a spirit. You know, you better let go of that belief. But it may take, you know, 100 years or so. Who knows? But they're still allowed in heaven because they are good, kind people and they're trying their best. Okay. So that was, thank you for everyone being part of our Q&A today. Again, if you're interested in kind of getting into the nitty gritty and how things really work, read The Spirit Realm, Spiritism Revealed, The Reality of Our Existence. It's in Kindle, paperback, and in Audible format. And so, and if you want to get to that, go to my site, nwspiritism.com. You'll see it on the right-hand navigation side. I also have other books there, like How to Live Inner Peace Through Spiritism, all about reincarnation. So get what you want from there, understand it, ask questions. If you have other questions, put them in the comment section. If you want to talk to me personally, on my blog site, there's the About Me contact section. Write me an email, and then I will email you back with my personal email. You know, I don't advertise my personal email because, you know, once you do that, everyone, you get all sorts of spam. So, but yeah, so if you need your own personal questions, I'll be happy, and I can always set up times on WhatsApp or Skype or whatever type of software application you'd like to use. Anyway, I want to say thanks for being here, and God bless everyone. God bless.